The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, the 18th day of April, 2024. Trump back on the campaign trail today in court. it is. I don't know what's better. I guess I do, obviously, because the notion of Trump being on the campaign trail in court is not just a glib, facile way of saying that he's making the most of a bad situation, making lemonade out of the lemons of these ridiculous lawfare trials of his. It really, really is true, because not only does being in, you know, the most populous city in America on trial, on this witch hunt trial, where he can just wax semi-eloquently, at least going in and coming out. It's Trumpian, it's vintage, and everybody has to cover him. Everybody has to cover him. Did they not know how this would go? To the leftist Trump-hating media culture, be careful what you wish for, because this guy who plays you like a Stradivarius is on his way into the courtroom. He'll be on the way into the courtroom in an hour and a fraction, and he is going to go off about Alvin Bragg. And Bragg is watching and listening every day. Alvin Bragg had a statement the other day that was a direct result of Trump's visit. And here, by the way, is the other byproduct of the greatness of Trump being on trial in New York, is as soon as, even on a day where he is shackled to that table, metaphorically, at least for now, as soon as he's done, they wrap up at about 4 o'clock, offering plenty of time for him to go to Harlem and get love from people outside the bodega where Alvin Bragg sent the proprietor to Rikers Island for defending himself against an attack. So the courtroom is the campaign trail. The entire city of New York is the campaign trail. The entire media culture follows his every breath, his every utterance. And, you know, nobody likes to be in the middle of a criminal trial. That's never your best day. But talk about, and you can always see that something is working by virtue of the reactions. And so, oh my gosh, and some of these reactions, somebody in the media culture, somebody in the cable news jackal pit called him that he's like a caged animal, and that because he lacks control, he could lash out at any moment. That is control. That is Trump under control when he lashes out. That is him in full control of his faculties and knowing exactly what he's doing. And it's just masterful. It is just masterful. So as we begin jury selection for this day, 7 down, 5 to go, and then you have to have 6 alternates. Yesterday, we spent a lot of time asking, could you be on the Trump jury? We talked about the interesting dichotomy of the seeming wisdom of getting somebody off the jury who hates his guts. There was the one lady who got bounced from jury responsibilities because I guess she's busy. I was like, can you use that now? Well, it's really inconvenient for my job. Really? You could use that? But she admitted, I'm not a fan of his, but I think I could be objective. I don't know that I trust these people. And then I tried to turn the coin around and say, if you, let's say, are a big Trump fan, I mean, a MAGA hat wearing, let's see him re-inaugurated January 20th, 25, you know, could you be on the jury and fairly assess the evidence against him? And then I realized, bad example, because this trial is a joke. So it sort of need to be a hypothetical in which you say, if there's somebody whom you politically admired, could you sit on a jury and objectively assess the evidence against that person and convict if the evidence pointed you toward it? I could. And I would think most of y'all could, too. I mean, would you have the inability? Oh, but I really like the guy. I can't convict him. I don't know. Don't know. So as we begin, 866-660-5759, 866-660-5759. Our buddy Mike Gallagher joins us at 735. We'll see what is up his talk show sleeve. Congressman Roger Williams, 835 today. The House sent articles of impeachment to the Senate. The Senate handled them in the following fashion. Senate batted them down. You know, like a Victor Wembanyama rejection at the basket. Just not even going to handle it. Let them be judged by that. Let them be judged by that. At 9:35, we will welcome the man who, whenever I engage in Trump VP talk, which I often do because I'm pretty fascinated by it, who's he going to take? And I know it doesn't mean... Well, it means something, obviously. It's not, I don't think it's going to turn the election. I mean, it's worth a percentage point or two in a couple of states, probably. And listen, in an election that may well be this close, it's a big deal. It's not like earth shattering, but whoever he picks is going to be fine. But I'm fascinated by the Trump VP Derby. But every time I bring it up and work my way through Tim Scott or Sarah Huckabee Sanders or J.D. Vance or Tom Cotton, there is a name that floods the Via Scan of Las Colinas text line. Like, hey, how about this guy? 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 That guy joins us at 9:35 because he's a friend of mine. Larry Elder, 9:35. And I'll ask, and what I've said, it's similar to love Dr. Ben Carson. You know I love Larry, and you know I love Trump. I have said there's something generational happening here and that maybe we don't need two guys who are septuagenarians. We don't need two guys who are in their 70s. But if you take Trump and Larry Elder, I mean, I dream of having that kind of energy. And I'm a decade younger than these dudes. Well, not Larry. I'm 66. It's like, whoa. I mean, and which takes me back to Biden. It's not about the number. It's not about the number. What's Biden? How even old is he? 80, 81? It's his brain or lack of. Did you catch Bill Maher this past weekend? You know, he has an upfront guest and then goes back and does the panel with two people. It was pretty good. Piers Morgan was one of them, which he's always interesting. But you know who the guest was up front on Bill Maher in Real Time? It was William Shatner. William Shatner is 93 and is like doing TV specials in Antarctica. And I mean, I'm exhausted thinking of having William Shatner's schedule. He's nearly three decades older than me. It ain't about the number. So, anyway, well, here's the number, 866-660-5759. Let's use it. We're in Arlington. Kenneth, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir? Happy Thursday.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, on your subject of talk, what happened in America, as an amateur historian, I see the breakdown of all our rights and liberties, and it's just like the law of the jungle replaced the law of our Constitution. We have these judges, politicians, attorneys, and everything like that are usurping power, suppressing liberty, and just destroying what we had. As an amateur historian, I published 100 some books on the Civil War era when we had a breakdown in civilization.
Yes,
and we had military authorities in a lot of towns usurping power they don't deserve.
Yeah.
And it took years to get back over that. And unless we stand up and take over the schools, education system, and particularly the media, who are not doing their job, we're going to be worse shape where the criminals, terrorists, illegal immigrants all have rights that American citizens don't.
Yeah. Well, one of my takeaways is that you're an amateur historian, and I want to give you credit for something. There are longtime professional historians who don't have the grasp of things that you do. So congratulations on that. And the notion that our institutions are just sliding into the river, the notion that the stuff we, irrespective of political differences, you got to trust the FBI, got to trust the CIA. You know, your local school board should be trying to educate kids. The local cops should be able to, well, I don't know, arrest people. You know, our judicial system should embody the values of that statue of Lady Justice. Scales in her hand, blindfold on her face, not caring who is before her about race, about sex, about class, any of that. We should be able to trust these things. In the cancerous hands of the left, all of these things are in doubt. All of these things, these reputations have been damaged. All of them. And this is why, and everybody scrunches up their eyebrows a little bit when I say this, this is why the Trump reelection will be a blow for normalcy. This most abnormal of candidates, this most wheels-off personality in a president, is the vote for normalcy. Because it is normal to have borders. It is normal to have crime punished. It is normal to have prices you can afford. It is normal for America to present a strong face to the world. It is normal to know how many genders there are. These things are normal. The Trump victory, if we are blessed to have it, if we have our act together, will be a blow for a return to normalcy. We're in Dallas. Jerry, Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Thursday.
Hey, hi, Mark.
Hi.
I just had a comment that I thought I would share with you. I've been on a jury before,
mm-hmm.
and the jury that I was on, there were people there who were I was very sympathetic to,
mm-hmm.
and would like to have said, hey, and it was not a jury as far as guilty of crime or not. It was a civil trial,
mm-hmm.
but I'd like to have found farm, but I couldn't in it because it came down to not so much what I thought about him. It came down to a jury question. The jury question at the end of the trial,
mm-hmm.
which is, what is the law that's been broken? And the jury then has to go and answer that. Did he break this law or not?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so interesting to me is that's never really talked about. And I was watching the news last night, and they said that it's just a hodgepodge of a charge against him.
Yes.
Federal charge, you know, and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering how they're going to craft that jury question.
Well, the jury instructions, first of all, you're 100% correct. And secondly, you are a hero because that's exactly what I was talking about. There you are on a jury looking at a defendant and thinking, you know, this seems like a likable soul. Seems somebody I can hang with, have coffee with. Seems like but doesn't matter. That's the blindfold. That's the blindfold you have to put on and say, look, what I've got to examine is not whether I like or don't like this person, but what are the facts of the case? What are the facts and what's the evidence? The facts and evidence in this Alvin Bragg case against Trump, a state level case, not federal, is threadbare. It is concocted out of whole cloth. So the question is going to be, will the jury be able to do what you did? And look at the defendant and say, and not see Donald Trump, whom they may love or hate, probably hate because it's New York, but take a look at the evidence and say, did the prosecution actually succeed in arguing that he committed some type of campaign finance fraud by identifying a payment to a lawyer as a legal expense? So, Jerry, thank you. You're an example of exactly what jurors are supposed to do, and I appreciate you. And I hope you guys appreciate this. Lord, guide us and protect us as we face the challenges of this new day. We thank you every day for this blessed nation and for your hand in creating it. Fill our hearts with the energy to protect the freedoms which come from you, which our nation was founded to protect. Let us navigate these troubling times with a positive spirit, treating others as we would want to be treated. Lord, these are times of trial and challenge. Lift us as we follow your word and work for a better America, where our Constitution is honored, where our schools and public spaces are safe, where our elections are reliable, our borders work, where our institutions deserve our trust, where we protect the unborn and we fight for the meaning and the intent of the two genders you created, and where our differences are hashed out with honesty and goodwill, and our freedoms of speech and worship are protected. As we face each day's problems, give us the clarity to look around and cherish our many blessings in our nation, our great state of Texas, our communities, and our families. If we follow you, Lord, we know we can get through anything, and we ask these things in your holy name. Amen. 722. Are we going to give props and love to a country that has said we are done with this puberty blocker nonsense? Who is that wise country whom we should emulate? Tell you next. 722.
More cowbell.
It's Manny Charlton, Pete Agnew, and the Boys of Nazareth. Title track of Hair of the Dog. Where are they from? Where are they from? I know we could have done Love Hurts, but, you know, hey. They're going to work blue here in a minute. Now you're messing with them. Well, you know. Yeah, they're from Scotland. They're from Scotland, the Boys of Nazareth are. And it is Scotland that has now said no more puberty blockers, or as they call them over there, puberty blockers. And they've said, we're done with this nonsense, and good for Scotland, and so let us emulate them. We are in Carrollton. Daryl, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Morning, Mark.
Hey.
I'm just curious about Biden's plan to replenish the nation's oil supply, the strategic reserves.
Right.
Several months ago, he sold off part of it, trying to hold the prices down in the United States. And I'm just curious as to how much he's replaced.
I don't know if this is funny, because sometimes we ask questions knowing the answer. If you have, then it leads me directly to the following. The last I had talked oil with people, we had actually canceled the purchase of about 3 million barrels of oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve because of the skyrocketing cost of oil. The Department of Energy said they were not going to be awarding contracts for various solicitations of about 3 million barrels of domestically produced crude. And so that means that the attempt to build back the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, is hindered. And how sweetly appropriate is it that Biden's attempt to build something back and replenish something that should be replenished is hindered by the skyrocketing price of something, because we are a country currently burdened by the skyrocketing price of everything. Thank you, sir. All right, here's something that's free. A whole show is free. I hope you get more than what you pay for. Let's hop into the newsroom with Nikki Whaley, and then let's ring up our talk show buddy Mike Gallagher and see what's in his brain for this Thursday. It's 7:30. I'm Mark Davis. Here's Nikki.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight.
A song Mike knows well. A song Mike has seen performed, I'm guessing, by Billy Joel perhaps multiple times. Would I be right?
Once at the Garden.
Right.
But, you know, there was big drama about they aired his, what was it, his 100th, 100th concert?
And they did it was live. Go ahead, tell the story. That's why I'm doing this.
Well, I only know a little bit about this. They screwed it up. I guess did they bail on Piano Man early?
So here's the deal. It was a really cool idea. CBS said, and I guess this was the 100th. This is what's so crazy. Artists go on tour and they do a series of arenas. And if you're a big enough artist, you can fill a 20,000 seat arena. What Billy Joel does is he has a residency at Madison Square Garden. He fills 18,000 seats like every week forever. And this was like the 100th iteration of his Madison Square Garden show, because the New Yorkers just keep coming back and coming back and coming back. And CBS said, okay, for the 100th one, let's do it live. And it's just humming along and it's doing great. And the way when he tours, he doesn't just do the big hits like Piano Man. He'll do deeper cuts for the real fans. And it's just fantastic. And it was live, which means it was going to be a little tricky. So by the time he's in the final encore of Piano Man, it gets to be 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central, and every CBS station dumps out to go to news. It's like, whoa, what? And I don't know what you wanted them to do. I mean, the clock is what the clock is. It was live. Listen, when the NFL runs long, 60 minutes can start at midnight. You never can tell. So what
they always go long.
You know what CBS is doing, though? They're going to, and I forget, I'll find the date. You can probably Google it, but they're going to rerun the whole things. So good for CBS in that. There's one network doing something good. Have you caught the grief that NPR, or the NPR drama of these past few
of
days?
Of course I am. We talked about it yesterday. And this new CEO, she's a piece of work, man. She is a piece of work. She gave a big statement about how the First Amendment has to be fought. Listen, you know, the biggest lie ever told is that the left is tolerant. They are the most intolerant bunch of babies that ever lived on the planet Earth.
Yep.
And here's a guy who got, I guess he sort of went off the reservation, editor for 25 years.
Uri Berliner.
And he wrote a piece and he said, look, there's a liberal bias here. There's a leftist bias. They suspended him.
Yep.
They punished him.
And then he quit.
And then he resigned.
Yep.
And he said, sorry, I can't work in a place where the CEO obviously has such hostility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good for him. But on the other hand, why are we paying one dime? Well,
there you are. And so NPR, for everybody who doesn't know, is part of the public broadcasting, and it gets about $500 million of our taxpayer dollars, which I know is lunch money against the federal budget, but it's a half a bill that could go to something. And if NPR wants
it's the size of the Trump fine in the city of New York.
That's valuable context. Exactly right. And if they and listen, full disclosure, there's stuff that NPR does that I think is superb. Fresh Air with Terry Gross, This American Life, wait, don't tell me. There's things they do that great, but when they cover news stuff and in their morning shows and afternoon shows, it is poisonous liberal Democrat talking points, which, by the way, they have every right to do, but we don't have to pay for it. We should not have a dime going to this. And don't you think that in the Hamptons alone, there's enough money to keep NPR afloat, you know, for 10 years. So let's get off the public dole and let NPR do whatever they want to do and do it as a public business.
The good news is this whole drama has put a new unwanted spotlight on them and this taxpayer funding. And you got some, I think Senator Marsha Blackburn and others are renewing their vigorous attempt to defund the NPR.
Finally, a defund movement conservatives can get behind.
You know, well, seriously, what's the argument for funding them?
Well, I'll tell you what it's historically been, is that the rest of broadcasting, like, I don't know, us and every other radio station that you're probably listening to, music, talk, and everything in between, is subject to market forces and what advertisers want and the public whims of the moment, whereas public broadcasting is supposed to be there to offer up things that are objectively good and enriching, irrespective of marketplace whim.
The Mark Davis Show is objectively good. The Mike Gallagher Show is objectively good. There's no argument to defend funding them with taxpayer dollars.
Of course not.
Progressives wouldn't fund you or me.
No.
And yet, can you imagine taxpayer dollars from lefties going to the Mike Gallagher Show or the Mark Davis Show or to 660 AM The Answer? Mm-hmm. They'd lose their minds. Mm-hmm. And so now that we do know there's a leftist bias, and it's inexcusable that we must defund NPR. You're right. $500 million in the scheme of things isn't a lot of money, but it's still nothing.
And
every
little bit. And listen, every once in a while, and I will watch a Morning Joe segment, but just to know what these people are doing. And the bias on NPR is not just, hey, here's why Trump's the devil, or hey, here's why your SUV is making the planet warmer. Sometimes it is sort of a curveball. They started up, you know, I'm Steve Inskeep, I'm Leila Faldin, and our next focus is...
Well, you know about NPR.
Our next story is about doxing. And I thought, oh, okay. And of course, doxing is when somebody's name and personal info is put out there ostensibly to be weaponized so that terrible things happen. And okay, so here's the story of someone who was doxed. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'm fascinated by this horrible social media phenomenon. It's also kind of legal because it tends to be stuff that's public information. So, okay, let's see what this is. You know who the victim was? The empathetic, sympathetic victim was of doxing, Mike? It was someone who is captured on video ripping a poster off a lamppost in New York of a Hamas-held hostage. This Jew-hating, anti-Semite, Hamas-loving woman was captured on video, and they said, hey, here's a woman ripping a child's picture down because she loves Hamas, and she wound up losing her job. catching some online hell. Imagine that. And they went to her. It's like, it was terrible what happened to me. I can't believe that just by, you know, and she understands that, okay, maybe I shouldn't have brought the poster down. But what happened to me was disproportionate. Look at the victim. How many doxing victims could you find? And they went and found her?
That's who they found. I mean, I love it. I love it when the old FAFO rule comes into effect.
Blanked around and found out.
I'll clean it up. Fart around and find out.
Yeah, buddy.
And here's a fart around and find out victim,
yep.
or exhibitor. The young woman who stood up before the Bakersfield, California City Council,
mm-hmm.
and she was livid because they weren't sufficiently supportive of Hamas,
yep.
or the Palestinians or Gaza.
What'd she tell them?
And she's, we're going to murder you all.
Right, exactly.
And she was so cocky.
She did a mic drop. We're going to murder you all.
We're going to murder you all.
Yep.
And then twice, two different parts of her speech.
Which is a crime.
Which is a crime to do that, of course. Well, mm-hmm. she's in handcuffs in front,
yes.
of the court, crying and sobbing,
yeah,
because
buddy.
Now they're charging her with about a gazillion felonies because,
yep.
she threatened the lives. And watching her weep, I'm ashamed of myself, but I took great joy in that. Because you know what? Hey, that actions have consequences.
They do. At least she got punished. In Garland, there were 23 pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protesters blocking entry into a contractor's a parking lot, and those 23 people got arrested, and now the Palestinian local, Garland, Texas, Palestinian activists are saying, drop the charges. You need to drop the charges. No, we're not dropping the charges. And if we talked about Tom Cotton's suggestion that if they block a bridge, throw them into the river.
Yeah, get it. We'll take care of it Arkansas
last
way. We don't mess around
protest,
with that in Arkansas.
Final protest if that's not happening.
Well, there are deadly consequences to actions. As we know, the Senate, no surprise, immediately struck down the effort to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas.
Yep.
But here's a real tragic story out of Nevada where, again, actions have deadly, deadly consequences. One of the Democrats, one of the senators who has been railing against any effort to impeach Mayorkas, who's been railing against any concerns about the border, is a Democrat Senator Catherine Cortez Masto.
Mm-hmm.
She's been telling reporters, there's no evidence that the border is open. The border is just fine. Her top aide, her chief aide, was a guy by the name of Kurt Engelhardt.
He was
a senior advisor. Oh, yeah, was, because now an 18-year-old illegal has been arrested in connection to his death.
Oh, no.
Yep, on April 6th, 4:30 in the morning, 18-year-old involved in a two-vehicle crash that killed Engelhardt. He was beloved. He was Senator Cortez Masto's top advisor, and now he's dead, and they're burying him, and an illegal immigrant has been jailed for the death.
Do you think that will bring clarity to the senator and others like her?
It should. It should. I mean, I really struggle with wondering if the people, for example, who have the Trump derangement syndrome, mm-hmm. can be won over. I've had a couple of really fiery arguments this week with people who, you know, Trump's an insurrectionist.
No.
And I've been thinking about your prayer. I'm going to really take your morning prayer to heart, where people of goodwill and good faith can have a dialogue, essentially. And I want to try to do that to see if any of these people who are so blindingly rage-filled with Donald Trump can recognize how awful this lawfare is and how one day it can be used against them or the Democrat of their choice. This is such an egregious example of an abuse of power. It's an Bill Barr, of all people, who's no big Trump fan, used the right word, Mark. It's an abomination.
Yes.
Look at the side-by-side images of Trump in a courtroom and Biden on the campaign trail. And yesterday, Biden is actually taunted Trump and said, my political opponent is a little busy these days.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. I mean, he's so cocky, he can't even hide the real agenda here. And the agenda here is to hobble the Trump candidacy while Biden is now campaigning. And incidentally, what an opposite optic from 2020, where he hid in the basement,
yep.
never left Wilmington, went once in a while to a parking lot with seven cars weakly honking their horns. Oh, yeah, he got 81 million votes, my butt.
Yep.
But anyway, now he's campaigning. And so everything is different. And Biden is sort of, he's now wants to impose
tariffs on China. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. He bashed Trump for doing that when Trump successfully did it. So everything is sort of up on its axis. I want to tell you a personal story about an event I was invited to. Mm-hmm. Because it gets back to whether or not we can change the hearts and minds of people who hate Trump. Mm-hmm. I'm especially fixated on so-called Republicans who hate Trump. Mm-hmm. I was invited to an event, and on the panel was going to be one of the famous Republican never-Trumpers.
Yeah.
Now, I said, excuse me, how's that going to work?
Yeah.
There's four of us on the panel. Mm-hmm. Three of us understand the essential need to get Trump reelected.
Ooh.
We know that the country's at stake.
Yeah.
We know that the whole future of this experiment mm-hmm. hangs in the balance. Honestly, mm-hmm. how does it work to have a Republican who has bashed Trump incessantly?
Yeah.
I mean, you got an audience of 1,000 people, 1,500 people.
Right.
Seriously, Mark. If you're planning that event, would you put a Republican never Trumper on the panel?
If I'm planning it and it's like, hey, let's have some fun here with differences of opinion, every day I'd put that person on the panel. If, however, if it's kind of, I mean, who's doing the event, if I may ask?
I'd rather not get into I don't want to embarrass anybody. No,
okay,
but the event.
Let me answer your question. If it is, then if it is, if it's like a Salem event, if it's us, I wouldn't, because I don't want to put. I necessarily want to put. I mean, I don't. Not that everything needs to be rah rah. You know, everybody's singing from the same hymnal necessarily. But all that's going to do, excuse me, is just piss people off.
The event is billed as taking back the White House.
Oh, dude.
So then how do you put somebody who doesn't like Trump on a panel? Because you're right. You're going to have people booing this person off the stage.
It won't work well for the person at all.
Or the event.
No.
Or us. I don't want to get into a knockdown dragout with a so-called colleague,
yeah.
And this would have been a colleague. Incidentally, the cooler heads prevailed, and the person has been disinvited.
No, and so everybody knows. I think we just made clear that if it's just an objective, here's a bunch of Republican opinions, and we're going to save one slot for the Republicans who hate Trump. You bet. There's something noble in that, and everybody just comes in. It's like, okay, this could be fun. But if it is kind of a rally, and again, what's it called? As you said, taking back the White House. If you have somebody on the stage who's not interested in taking back the White House, that's a bit of a non-starter.
Well, but what is their plan B?
To hate on him, and that's why when you invoke the prayer, listen, I'm the guy who does the prayer, so I appreciate so much your spirit in going into this and emulating that notion of goodwill. But if you're bringing goodwill, a desire to hear their argument, offer goodwill, offer a respectful ear, but they don't have goodwill because all they just do is hate him, and they're willing to sacrifice every conservative thing they supposedly stand for in order to hate on Trump, then that goodwill connection just ain't going to be made.
But I'm not asking that rhetorically. If their plan is to hate on Trump,
that's it. They
want four more years of Biden?
Yes!
They want four more years of open borders?
They don't mind it because their hatred of Trump is more important than all those things. Because gather all of these never-Trumpers, all of them, and they share something in common, and that is some degree of liberalism, or at least friendliness of and tolerance toward liberalism. Conservatives who are in the never. There are no actual stalwart, steadfast conservatives in that movement.
They don't exist. You can't be. And that brings us to Mike Johnson, because right now Joe Biden has warmed up to Speaker Johnson's plan to fund Ukraine. And I got to tell you something. I'm between a rock and a hard place on this one. Because I don't want the chaos months before the general election. But Mark, I understand the pushback.
I do too.
I get it. I mean, we got America's on fire, and we're supposed to fund Ukraine.
Thank you,
Mark.
I mean,
but it kills me because, and I'm going to try to tackle this on the air today. And wish me luck.
Yeah.
Say another prayer for me, because I'm going to need it. But let me end with good news. I'm going to be in South Carolina this weekend.
Yes.
And I found out that President Trump is going to have a rally in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yes.
Well, guess who's going? I'm going to go. And
yes!
You know why I'm going?
Excellent.
I'll do some videos from there on our YouTube channel. Subscribe to that. But you know what? I'm going for one reason. I'm not going as a broadcaster.
Yeah.
I'm not going as a talk show.
As an American?
I'm going as an I'm going as an American citizen who knows how much support this guy has to have.
And listen, we got a heavy, rally heavy behind military. It's right by Fayetteville, right by Fort Bragg. Wilmington's out on the coast. It's a beautiful community. You're going to have the best time. When is that?
I've even chartered a plane for the occasion. Now that's, I mean, forget Delta. Yes. I'm on a little jet to go over to Wilmington. It's Saturday night.
Cool.
And I'm very excited. And the guy that helped me get there, incidentally, mm-hmm. is going to be on the show today. Mm-hmm. You may have heard of Dr. G. Sebastian Gorka is going to join us at 10:35.
Fantastic. So good.
Big weekend ahead. So, all right. See you tomorrow morning, my friend.
Fantastic. We are ready. And then, boy, I can't wait for Monday, 7:35, because Mike will have stories. He always does. And his stories of today start at 10 as soon as we're done on 660 AM The Answer. Born 100 years ago today, in Vinton, Louisiana, Clarence Gatemouth Brown. Not to be confused with Clarence Frogman Henry, who did the Rush. Them, I ain't got a home. That's another Clarence. That's Frogmouth. This is Gatemouth. From 1949, this is Mary Is Fine. From Clarence Brown.
She got very big eyes. She's fine otherwise.
So we will let Clarence Gatemouth Brown take us out and into the 8 o'clock hour. Do join us there at 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
That Mary wore. Yes, the leg was there. That Mary wore.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.